You know what? The word maybe is disruption, right? Certainly this is a disruption. It's a really big, and in some places, life or death disruption to us. But disruption, in some cases, especially when it comes to industry, can be a really good thing.
Hello, and welcome to the Real Estate Wine and More podcast. I'm Howard Fletcher. Listen, strategize, develop, amplify. If you go to the Mission Partners website, that is what they say they do. What is Mission Partners and what do they do? I have just the person to answer those questions, so stay tuned. Come on, Russ. Why not go downtown for a bucket of Napa? Mac and cheese and a side of beef. I want to go downtown for a bucket of Napa. They're right next door. Carrie Fox is the founder and CEO of Mission Partners, a strategic consultancy and certified B Corporation that guides high-potential nonprofits, foundations, and socially responsible corporations in realizing their greatest social impact. I know that sounds like a mouthful, and it is. Carrie has, through her years of experience and expertise in communications, formed a dynamic and effective consulting firm that helps organizations that seek to do good do it better. I'll let her tell you the rest. So with no further ado, here's my conversation with Carrie Fox, CEO of Mission Partners. And also, just a little bit of warning for you perfectionists, all you audio perfectionists out there, as Zoom is wont to do, we had a little bit of distortion on Carrie's end because of the internet and Zoom. And I really apologize for that. But this is such a good conversation. I wanted to bring it to you anyway, and it gives me a good excuse to invite Carrie back on the show. So get in a comfortable spot or whatever you do when you listen to your podcasts and enjoy.
Nice to see you.
Hey, it's nice to see you too. Okay, I'd like to welcome you to the show, Carrie Fox. Before I get into it, I do want to tell you a little story because... You know, as I mentioned in my email when I sent it to you, you know, I think it's probably been, I guesstimated 15 years, but it's been a while since I last saw you in 3D. In fact, I still haven't seen you in 3D. I'm just seeing you on a screen. But it was at a networking event in Bethesda, and it was one of those events where you get up and you give a little 1 or 2 minute elevator speech, and usually it's a pitch from somebody who sells insurance or something like that. And you stood up and your quote unquote pitch was really more of an invitation to get people who could use your help to grow their businesses to take you up on your offer to help them. Now, I know that some people might say, well, that was a very sophisticated sales pitch, but it did seem to be very genuine, which made an impression on me. I remember that because most of them, probably including my own, probably were not of that ilk. You know, they were more elevator pitchy than what I saw you do. So that made an impression on me. So when I decided to expand this podcast, I used to just interview winemakers and craft brewers. And when I wanted to expand it to business people and change agents who could maybe share what they do, you came to mind. 15 years later, boom, you came to mind.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
And so I thought that when I contacted you, I was so glad to, you know, that you took me up on the offer to come and have a conversation. So welcome, Carrie Fox, to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Okay. Well, you know, before we get into the guts, I know you're the CEO of Mission Partners, and I'll let you explain what Mission Partners is. But before we get to that, tell us about your journey, your background. How did you get here?
Sure. Okay, will do. So I grew up in New Jersey. I ended up coming down to the DC area for college. I was actually in Baltimore for college. I had an out of the blue, unbelievable opportunity to start my career actually while I was still in college, working for Cal Ripken when he was still playing ball for the Orioles.
Wow.
And was hired as his director of communications, started as an intern when I was a junior in college, started as his director of communications when I was a senior in college. And literally the day after I walked across the stage with my diploma, I was full-time with him on his team, traveling around the country, helping him build all of his off-the-field pursuits, which then became the start of his foundation and preparing for his Hall of Fame run. So I was there for a few years and then got the true DC bug and decided to move on from what was called Ripken Baseball, join a startup firm in DC, and then started my own at the ripe old age of 25. Yeah. And so I've been at this business for a while on my own. I am now a mom of two girls. So I've got a daughter who's 10 and another who's 7, and we are deep in the midst of virtual learning here. And we live in Rockville, Maryland, and you know, really feel like this is the place that we always wanted to find to be able to raise our kids, a place that really is diverse. And we wanted our kids to be, while they are still, actually, I should say this, they are no longer in the majority. They are more so in the minority, as we are in a majority-minority community. And that was really important to us. Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little about what you did. I mean, you formed your own business. I think it was Fox Communications. Am I correct?
Correct.
Carrie Fox Communications. See, the old memory still... Yeah. Still working.
Yep, it was C Fox Communications, okay. And I had C Fox for about 13 years. And we were a pretty standard public relations firm. We were working with small businesses. We were working with nonprofits. We were helping people tell their stories, mm-hmm. You know, finding the words and the visuals to really help compel someone to action, whether that was helping to grow a business or helping to move an idea forward that maybe would inform policy change. But we were storytellers and still are. And then 2016 came around and we were thinking about the presidential election and thinking about the role that we were playing here in the DC area and decided we wanted to do more than tell stories. We wanted to dig into some of the issues that our clients were feeling and expressing. And a lot of that had to do with the inequities that we were seeing about why some portions of our population just continue to you know, live in a cycle of poverty, why so many people in our country don't have access to quality financial tools and assets. And so we dug in and said, you know what, we're going to keep the structure of the firm that we had, but we're going to start a new firm intentionally as a B corporation. So we operate in a very different way, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, but we're going to go beyond storytelling, and we're really going to support and address some of the social change that we want to see on the issues that we work on. So we work on issues of education. We work on issues tied to women and girls. We work on a lot of issues around journalism and protecting journalism, affordable housing, economic mobility. And we dig in. We use our communication skills to do the best we can to affect change on those issues.
Well, tell me about what you're operating as a B corporation.
So B corporation is a benefit corporation, mm-hmm. meaning we don't operate for the singular benefit of the owner or of our stakeholders or shareholders, I should say. But we operate with a triple bottom line philosophy of people, planet, and profit. So we're thinking about in every decision we make, are we helping or harming the world around us, right? Are our benefits ensuring that every employee, even the most junior level employee on our team, do they have access to true wealth building opportunities? Are we creating upskilling opportunities across the team? Are we supporting, and in some cases, maybe challenging, you know, systems that have limited people's abilities? And instead, are we creating an environment that's really supporting everyone's growth equitably? So we really challenge that idea of capitalism, right? That it should work for everybody. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't just work for the business owner. And that's been really, back when you first met me 15 years ago, I think I had that in my blood and I just didn't know what it was called. And so we have really leaned into the idea of being a purpose-driven business and taking that into everything that we do every day.
What are some, for those people who are listening, who work in the areas that you described, what are some telltale signs or some symptoms that an organization might see where it would be time to call mission partners? What, you know, before it becomes a crisis, what are some things you could maybe share that say, well, whether they call you or someone else, hopefully they will be calling you to get some extra help. What do you help these organizations do?
The simplest way I think about it is if an organization is in a moment of transition, if they are getting ready for something to happen, that could be maybe they're considering a merger, maybe they're thinking about a CEO change or a leadership change, maybe they're getting ready to roll out a new program or idea, or maybe they actually have an idea but have no idea how to actually bring it to market. Mm-hmm. That's often the moment that we step in. So our process almost always starts with a process that we call visioneering, which is, you know, engineering your vision, right? Like, what do you want your future to be? And what are the steps you have to take to get there? And we're doing that, again, often through a lens of communications, but so much of it is baked in business strategy, right? What are the barriers standing your way? Is it funding? Then let's think about who our potential partners could be that might want to fund this or come in on us with us. And once we have identified those, let's create a pitch and help you build those relationships. Or maybe it's a lack of understanding about our issue, and so we need to create a public campaign to really educate our key audiences on this issue. But really, you know, you could take any project, any organization, and if you ask them that question, what stands in your way? The core answer is almost always something tied to communications, right? It's that there's people don't understand. I don't know how to bring my team along on this. You look at any of those, and really they're all about communications. Yeah.
We're in a real strange time right now.
Yes, we are.
With the pandemic, among other things, but I'm just going to speak specifically to COVID. With the organizations that you work with, what have been some of the challenges without, you know, I don't know how specific you can get, but what are some of the challenges that some of them have in that space run into? And have they had to radically change the way they go about doing whatever it is they do? And that's,
yes,
a big question.
100%. 100%. You know, and the line I think I've used more than any other is out of crisis comes innovation, right? And so it's all about how we use this moment as hard and really, really beyond anyone's imagination that we are in. But so many of the organizations that we worked with, those first few weeks as we all went into quarantine around the country, you know, we had organizations who were gearing up for events that in some cases, the single event was going to be a representative of 60% of an organization's revenue for that year. And so what do you do when your one event is canceled and your revenue essentially is gone for the year? And so there were a lot of organizations who had to radically reimagine, what does it look like to gather when you can't gather? What does it look like to fundraise when you can't be in person and have a powerful experience for someone to have? So there has been a lot of really innovation and creativity about how we've been bringing people together in these times. And so that's been one piece that I think is still being reimagined for a lot of organizations, is what will it look like for a long time for people to gather again? And, I think it's almost still to be determined in some ways on what the future will look like on that front.
And we'll be right back after this short break. Hello, friends. I just want to take a moment to let you know about some other projects I'm working on, and also let you know how you can reach me in case you know of someone who is thinking of buying or selling a home. You know, most people only go through the home buying process once or twice in their lifetime. Most of the time, knowing what to do in order to get the best price for your house, or understanding how to obtain financing or negotiating a winning purchase contract, can feel like knowing what your mission is, but needing just a little expertise and help to be as efficient and effective as possible to get there. You need a partner to carry out your mission successfully. You see what I did there? Huh? No? All right, I'll keep trying. Listen, if you know someone who's thinking of buying or selling a house, please contact me, Howard Fletcher, at 301-233-2845, or email me at howard@kw.com. My contact information is in the show notes. Even if you just have questions about the market and you're not looking to buy or sell, I'll be happy to help. Just please reach out. Also, you can catch me and my buddy, Aaron Couch, breaking down all 60 episodes of HBO's classic drama, The Wire, while highlighting and drinking bottles of wine made by some of the best winemakers in the DMV on Vino and Convo with Fletch and Couch. and you can find it on whatever platform you use to get this podcast or any others that you listen to. Check us out. You won't be disappointed. I promise. Now that's enough out of me. Back to the show and Carrie. Yeah, I have, we've all experienced that. But the simple fact that we are sitting here on Zoom is speaks to that as far as what I do. I mean, I prefer, I think most people prefer, but in what I do as a journalist, I'd much rather sit down and be able to meet somebody face-to-face. And certainly the recording is better also face-to-face. But in certain ways, it's helped. It's made people a little bit more accessible. I mean, because everyone has busy schedules. And so for me to sit down with you in person probably would have been a little bit more challenging to get on your calendar to do that than to do this. So in certain ways, it's been very good as far as getting being able to contact people. So in that vein of things improving because of this crisis we're in or certain things, there are certain, and I don't know, I don't want to pigeonhole you into saying you work mainly in the nonprofit space or whatever, but in the B space, let's just say that. I know some organizations in that space, in their mission, have served their purpose better because of we're in the situation. I'm thinking specifically of the rescue sector. I mean, I interviewed somebody last week who has a dog rescue shelter, and they've had a hard time holding on to animals because so many people are at home and they've been getting these animals. Now, they did have to deal with the new demand suddenly. Right. It was a nice problem to have, and especially in that space. It was a nice problem to have, but still, they did have to deal with more requests than ever before. So are there any of the businesses that you're working with that found themselves in a position where not it was good for what they do? You know, obviously, if you run a food bank, maybe not so good because you'd run out of food. No one likes to do that. Is there anything like the shelter situation that you run into?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot. It's a great question. And if you had a chance to watch Michelle Obama's speech from earlier this week, it's been playing over and over again in my head. And there's one line that really comes to mind right now. And she was talking about how she was talking about a president, but really this is, I think, applies to leaders, right? Like being a president doesn't make you who you are. It reveals who you are. And a moment like this certainly reveals who we are as leaders. And so 100%, I am thinking about organizations who have risen to the moment, who said, you know what, we were planning to do something and we have a lot of resources set aside and that's not going to matter anymore. We're immediately going to reallocate those resources and we're going to make masks, right? And we know that from some of the clothing companies that we work with in the B Corp space, that they had to very quickly completely change their business model. We had just been working with a really great startup food company based in LA. They had just gotten an enormous grant because they were working on creating jobs for individuals who were returning post-incarceration. And they were really trying to challenge stereotypes, right? To say that we can create really solid wealth-building opportunities, even if someone's coming out of the system set up for failure. And they were all set up, and then we went into quarantine, and they couldn't open their shops, and they couldn't have these jobs, and they had to think about what to do about it. And they immediately shifted their model to basically say, we're still going to do this. We're going to do it in a safe way in terms of packaging the food, and we're going to make sure that we can feed every person in LA who needs it right now. So they shifted their model, right, immediately from a for-profit model to a for-purpose model. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that, of people willing to be creative on how do we address the moment of now in a way that maybe we wouldn't have been willing to before.
Yeah. And I think where a lot of us are coming to the realization that it's not just now necessarily. Before, I would say back in April, the mindset was, we're going to do this for now until we get back to normal. And I think it's becoming very, very clear that we're going through a paradigm shift where things are going to just change to a certain extent. Right. And how do we navigate that those waters, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah, and it's true. You know, someone yesterday said to me, is this just another moment in time, right? Is this a radical moment in time where we're thinking about how society and people and businesses are challenging structures, and we're going to eventually fall back into the same routines? Or are we really going to radically change what the future looks like? And I certainly hope, I like to think that going back isn't even an option, because normal, as much as it worked for a lot of people, didn't work for a whole lot more people. So it's a chance for us to really use our empathy skill as much as we can, right? I sit here as a white woman in an upper class neighborhood with a business, with two kids who have access to computers and can get their education. There's a lot that I am privileged and will always have that privilege. And so it's a matter of how much we use this moment, again, as you said, more than a moment, and more so as the basis of our future, you know, to think about what we're going to leave behind.
Yeah. Well, one of the good things that's happened out of this is, and it just building on what we're saying, is that it's forced us, at least I'll speak to myself.
Yes.
I make a living through real estate. A lot of driving. A lot of driving. And, you know, I am, you know, I'm concerned about my carbon footprint. I truly am. But some of it in my mind, I'd said, well, I can't get around doing this. This is something you just can't get around doing. Well, guess what? I'm not driving as hardly, I mean, I'm not even driving a fifth as much as I used to drive because of where we're in. And I'm still doing business. Now, is it the ideal way of doing business? Well, I like the good old days, sure. But, you know, I think we're going to have to find a happy medium. And because we're all experiencing this at the same time, we're finding that, well, maybe there is a better way or an alternative way of doing it that's probably better in the long run. You know?
I know this is your podcast and your show, but I'd love to ask you a question about that. Which is, you know, I've been asking people what the silver linings are, and it sounds like maybe that's one for you. You know, what has really come out of this that could really, that you hope sticks?
Well, I hope that people learn, start to value connecting more. Now, at first, because it was such a radical change, you know, in meetings I used to go to or just situations where it used to be in person and people were used to being in person, there was a lot of whining and complaining that I wish we could all get together. I can't wait till this is over. Well, that lasted for about a couple of months. Now that everybody's sort of like resigned to the fact that we're going to have to use this technology, there's been a lot more connection. I think it's kind of exploded. So I think one of the silver linings out of this is that, okay, maybe we're not in the same room, but I'm making more connections with people virtually face to face during the day than I ever did before during a 24-hour period, unless I was in an auditorium or something, you know? And so I think that in a weird way, we're going to become hopefully closer together. You know, now it's not a substitute for touch and feel and being in the same space. It's not a substitute, but certainly I think it's an area that's good. I mean, there's some growth that comes out of this. I don't know if this isn't going to answer your question along what you're asking about what's a silver lining. I think it's sort of a silver lining.
I think so too. I agree.
You know, I do another podcast about entertainment, and one of the things that has been an issue has been the movie theaters. And I've been following AMC, and I've been very frustrated with the upper management of AMC because they keep on, you know, getting more money and borrowing money, trying to stay open, trying to weather this storm, like we're going to go back to the movie theaters. And my point on the podcast that I do is that they haven't figured out we're in a shift, and people are now used to, you have children. You know, I just don't think that parents are going to be willing to like take their kids to see a lot all of these movies that they used to take their kids to see. Maybe a few if it's a big, huge production and it warrants it. A lot of special effects and all that kind of stuff. But we have people, large television sets are not that expensive anymore for those people who can fit a large television set in their space. And so, I just think that now we're in a whole different space in a very short period of time. So the silver lining is that it it accelerated some growth for us as a society.
I agree. You know, that point, I think about Broadway, right? When will Broadway reopen? And then the genius of Hamilton, you know, being now available online so anyone can watch it, right? So how we take Broadway, which for so long was limited to just the people who could go to New York and watch a show, will we see more of that kind of distribution of media in ways that more people can get their hands on and experience it?
I'm smiling because I did a whole show on that this past year, 2 years. Joan, my partner and I, Joan, went up. I've seen more Broadway shows in the last 2 years than I've seen in my entire life. And I'm not young. Okay. So, and so it just so happened. And we're starting to like it, although it's, you know, it's not, as if you don't live in New York, it's not a cheap trip, even if you're in New York.
That's right.
You travel to New York to go to a Broadway show and to eat and do all that. It is expensive. Mm-hmm. I don't care how you cut it.
Yes, it is.
So one of the silver linings in this whole thing is that I think it's Broadway's going to be more accessible to people. And one of the things I said on the show is that I hope these theater owners at Broadway, instead of being thick-headed and saying, we want to keep our box office revenue the way it is, they need to start partnering with streaming services and saying, when we have a show, yeah, you can come and see it. I think it's going to be a very exclusive. Well, Broadway was already exclusive. It's going to be a very exclusive situation to see it live. Mm-hmm. But they can open a show and do Star Wars-like money if they open it worldwide to streaming.
That's right.
And if you get somebody who can film it correctly, like I don't want to get all off on a tangent, but I think Spike Lee does a very good job of filming stage productions. I don't know if you've seen any of his things. He's going to do a show, what is it called? Anyway, it's the David Byrne Talking Heads show that was on Broadway. They're going to have that on HBO this next year. And Spike Lee is going to direct that. And I think he does a very good job of directing a stage play and making you feel like you're watching a stage play rather than here's a video camera, sit, you know, just watching a stage. And so if you do it correctly, I think it can be a very good experience. And I think everyone will be happy.
Right.
You know, except for the real hardcore.
Yeah. But you know what? The word maybe is disruption, right? Certainly this is a disruption. It's a really big, and in some places, life or death disruption to us. But disruption, in some cases, especially when it comes to industry, can be a really good thing. So maybe some good disruption will happen.
Yeah. Okay. I know you're busy. Before you leave, just tell me what's in the future for Mission Partners and how can people get in touch with you if they want to speak to you, Kerry Fox, or speak to Mission Partners and your organization and get your help.
Okay, sounds good. So what's up for us? We're doing a little bit of disruption too. Our latest thing is we have launched a publishing house and are realizing that there is a lot of interest in individuals who are looking to get a message out and engage a community, that we have the resources and tools to help them do that. So we're still doing all of the work we did, but we've launched something called Mission Partners Press. You can find it on mission.partners is our website, and then /press. If you want to connect with me, you certainly can find my email address and information there. You can find me pretty easily active on social media as well, on LinkedIn or Twitter. Would love to have conversations with anybody who's listening if they're thinking about, you know, how they break through whatever barrier they have and, you know, using this moment of challenge for good. You know, I think we can find good in most things if we look hard enough.
Well, I will put all that information, at least your website, on in the show notes. And I think that's an excellent point to leave on. So thank you very much, Kerry Fox, for having this little conversation with me today. And maybe
great to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. And maybe bump into each other on Broadway. If so, you know, of course, the ticket will probably be about $5,000, but it'll be what it is. All right. So
we'll look forward to that.
Okay. Take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Real Estate, Wine, and More podcast. I'd like to thank Kerry Fox for taking a little time out of her very busy schedule to sit down and Zoom with me for a few minutes. If you want to contact Carrie or want more information about Mission Partners, please look in the show notes or Google Mission Partners, and I am positive that they're going to pop up. Speaking of websites, go to howardfletcher.com, where you can catch my profile of Carrie along with other profiles of the many faces of the DMV that make it such a great place to live, work, and play. I also need to thank my good friend Russell Tierney for my theme music. That's it in the background, Tasty Freeze, which is written and performed by his band Cadillac Grip. If you're ever in the Denver or Boulder, Colorado area, go see Cadillac Grip play. Because if you ain't hip to the grip, you just ain't hip. Thanks to my partner Joan, my mother Eva, and Jack the Black Pug. I would not be possible without all of you. Now, I know we're in a very strange times, folks. So please stay safe. Wash your hands. Wear a mask if you go out. Socially distance, if possible. Most of all, drink good wine. I'm Howard Fletcher. Thanks for listening. I'll see you again soon. Bye-bye. Stay right next door to the Tasty Freeze.